Good morning. I wish to begin by, first of all, thanking those of you who prayed for me. For those of you who don't know, I made a quick trip to Canada in this past week and joined extended family there as we grieved the passing of my brother-in-law. And I very much appreciate your prayers for that trip and for those of you who sent notes of about your prayers and notes of blessing to me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. The Lord blessed me there in so many ways, showed me in multiple ways that the decision to go and be with the family was just the right decision. So thank you again for your prayers, love, and support. I also wish to thank those of you who stepped in over this last week to serve while both Marcus and I have been away. I heard good reports of the prayer and worship evening that was here last weekend, and also a good Sunday morning of worship last Sunday. So thank you to those of you who stepped in to help out. I've been looking forward to this Sunday for a number of weeks because there is actually a beautiful convergence of events going on here. I'm not sure if you're aware. Perhaps you are. Depends on what country you come from, probably. But today, in my country of Canada, is called Remembrance Day. And in other countries, it's called by similar names. But the history of Remembrance Day for us really is the commemoration of the end of hostilities of World War I. And this happened, the end of hostilities in World War I happened on the 11th month of the 11th the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, so November the 11th at 11 a.m. And guess what year it was? 1918, so that makes it 100 years ago today. So there's quite a bit of activity on the news. You can read about the different kinds of celebrations that are going on. But here's the thing. This, if you go to the next slide here and the next one, this phrase is the one that catches us. It's the one that characterizes this day. Why do we have Remembrance Day lest we forget? Here's the thing. We are forgetful people. I don't know about you, but I'm forgetful. We forget many things, right? We forget names, we forget events. But in particular, we can even forget the very significant events of life. Remembrance Day helps us to remember, and it's given to us to remember the atrocities of war. Maybe we learn something from that. But it reminds us, lest we forget. So the second event that's happening today is that we're studying Exodus, and we're in Exodus 12 through 14, which is the event of Exodus and Passover. And I apologize, this picture is quite dim, but let me just explain. This is a family gathered around a table, and there's a lamb that's been sacrificed on the table here. This man here is painting the blood of the lamb on the doorposts here as God instructed them. Here's the angel of death coming by. We are in this amazing, amazingly central event of the Old Testament and even all of Scripture, the event of the Exodus and the celebration of Passover that is so closely connected to it. We might argue that the event of Exodus, the event of God rescuing his people out of Egypt and establishing them as a nation, is really a central event. Certainly in the book of Exodus, because this is what the book is called. This is the central event. But it's also a central event in the story of the Pentateuch, but also in the story of the Bible. The event of Exodus has so many lines, so many ways in which it foreshadows, so many ways in which we see the picture of the larger story of rescue, which is the story of Jesus coming into the world to be the sacrifice, to be our rescuer. And so it's a highly significant event that we have the privilege to look at today, and so we have this the way it's described is this, the event of Exodus is described, but also what is described is the celebration of Passover. And the celebration of Passover was an ongoing celebration lest we forget the significance of this event of Exodus. Alright? Even today, for Jewish people, the event of Passover is really about their identity, because this is where God rescued them out of Egypt and made a nation out of them. So the other event that's happening today, it would have happened last week. We normally do it on the first week, but because Marcus and I are both away, we chose to do it this week, and I'm really glad for that, because it fits so well with this here with the idea of remembering, and that is the act of communion, the celebration of communion. So Jesus gave us bread, he gave us the cup. Why? So that we would remember. So our theme this morning is about remembering. Remembering the significance of what Jesus has done for us to give us life. Remembering the significance of the event of Exodus, but even more for us who are followers of Jesus, remembering the significance of our rescue. Because, I don't know about you, but it's easy for me to kind of walk through life and get caught up in things that are going on and to forget the significance of these things. And so Jesus was so amazingly gracious to us to give us this gift of regularly coming back and remembering, reminding ourselves. I want to suggest there's three themes which kind of tie these events together, and three themes that I would particularly like to look at the story of the Exodus. First of all, there was a need for rescue. Israelites were desperately in need of rescue. And then there's this idea of sacrifice. Sacrifice that makes the rescue possible. And then once the rescue happens, there is a need to be reminded to remember. Right? Reminded to remember because we forget the significance of what God did. And so the Israelites are given this gift of the sacrifice of Passover. But just as you look at these three themes, I'd like to pay attention to the fact that isn't this really our story? Certainly it's the story of humans on this world. And the story of the Bible tells us that right there in the early part of the story, Genesis chapter 3, we all turned away from God, and when we turned away from God, sin entered the world and we were under the judgment of death. So Paul describes it later that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We are all under this sentence of death because the wages of sin is death and we are all sinners. We have this desperate need for rescue, every single one of us as individuals, but all of us as humanity have this need for rescue. We realize that at the very center of the story of the Bible is the story of rescue, that is the story of Jesus. That's why he came, to rescue us from this condemnation. And that's what made the rescue possible, his sacrifice. But how easy it is, even having received that gift of life, for us to forget. And so we need this constant reminder to pay attention to what Jesus has done for us. And so let me invite us this morning. Our strategy this morning really is to focus on the story of Exodus and Passover. But I'm not going to go through the story in detail. There's way too much material to cover in these chapters. Let me invite you, urge you, to take your Bible one day this week, maybe every day this week, and to read these three chapters. It won't take long. Exodus 12, 13, 14. And just marvel at what God does in the whole process of rescuing Israel out of Egypt. It's a beautiful story, sometimes complicated, but nevertheless a powerful story of rescue. And let me invite you to meditate on it. I would like us to look through these lenses of these three themes. First, the idea of rescue, the idea of sacrifice, and the idea of the reminder. And in so doing, as we apply that in the story of Exodus, we prepare our hearts for the remembrance and the communion meal that will follow our discussions. First of all, we pay attention then to the fact that Israel's in desperate need of rescue. I don't know if you were here when we started the story of Exodus, but we saw that right at the very beginning of Exodus chapters 1 and 2. And we see that Israel is suffering in Egypt now. At first, their time in Egypt was under the kind hand of a good Pharaoh who was good to Joseph. But then he died, 400 years go by, and now it's horrible. It's hell on earth for the people of Israel in Egypt. And we saw this in chapter 2, verse 23, where it says these words, during that long period, this period of 400 years in Egypt, the king of Egypt died, and the Israelites groaned in their slavery, and they cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. And God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and with Jacob. Here's the deal. The Israelites have no strength in themselves to fight against this slavery. The Egyptians are so powerful. This is this most powerful nation on earth probably at that time. And they were oppressing and making life unbearable. So what's happening? The Israelites have no strength to overcome. So guess what? They are in desperate need of rescue from someone who is bigger and stronger and more powerful. I want to suggest that there's another way that we see this need for rescue, and that's in the context of the 10th plague, because that's what we're really reading about when we read 12, 13, 14, is really this 10th plague that God brings against Egypt, and that is the death of the firstborn sons. We noticed when we were looking at the plagues 2 weeks ago that when in the first three plagues, it would seem that the first three plagues that were given generally. So the Israelites suffered from the blood and the frogs and the gnats. They were all suffering along with the Egyptians. But from plague number four, the text tells us specifically that God protects his people. I think this is a beautiful act of mercy from God, protecting his people who had already suffered so much from these plagues four through nine. When we come to plague number 10, what it seems is happening here, God is sending the angel of death and he's going throughout the land and he's asking the Israelites to do something. He's asking the Israelites to respond in faith. And what does that involve? It involves the sacrifice of a lamb. And so they're called to sacrifice this lamb and to take its blood and to put it on the doorposts. And the language which we read is that when the angel of death comes, when he sees the blood, he would pass over, right? This is where Passover comes from. And so it would seem, this seems to indicate that if Israel did not believe and they did not put the blood on the door, they would not have been saved from that angel of death. That would, it was what it would seem to indicate. And so it seems like there is an act of faith that was needed. But what we realize is that this was an act of faith. They could not do anything in themselves to avoid this angel of death coming. They could only do what God had asked them to do. Desperate need of rescue. A third way in which we see them so desperately in need of rescue is as the story moves along. It's very interesting to me. I believe what God does is as he's taking them out of Egypt and Pharaoh says to leave and they go, God leads them to a trap. God leads them to a place that's in a corner. Let's read about it in chapter 14, verses 1 through 3. It says this, "Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around in the land in confusion and they're hemmed in by the desert." And this language of hemmed in is very significant because what happens is Israel is led to this place where the sea is here and there's mountains around them and here is Pharaoh coming after them. And they are completely at a loss. They are completely stuck. There is nothing that they can do in themselves. And we read about it a little bit further down in chapter 14, verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. And they were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us here to the desert to die? What have you done bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Hear the language of desperation in their voices. They are at the end of themselves. There is absolutely no way that they can get out of this by their own strength. And God has put them there, right? God has put them in this space where there is absolutely nothing that they can do to save themselves. They are in desperate need of rescue. And the only solution is, in fact, a miraculous intervention from God, which is this, as the story goes, right? Moses raises his hand and the staff and the waters open and the Israelites go through on dry ground. It's an amazing, miraculous story of rescue. But here's the thing, as we think about our own lives, if we think that in some way we have what it takes to become a better person or to gain favor with God and we can just do that by being a better person, we have no hope of receiving the rescue. What we need to do is come to the end of ourselves, to recognize that we are all under this condemnation of death because of our sin. We in ourselves have no strength And we are desperately in need of rescue. And this rescue comes as a gift of grace through Jesus. This is how it comes. It doesn't come by earning it. It comes simply as receiving a gift of grace, even as the people of Israel received this gift of rescue from God. Nothing to do with their own abilities, nothing to do with their own strength, but simply receiving, simply obeying and walking through. We see this very interesting relationship between sacrifice and rescue in the story as it's given to us. It's very interesting to me if you read through the story of Exodus, especially the last few chapters. Chapters 7 through 11 are written in a very narrative, chronological timetable. Right? It's talking about the plagues as they come upon Egypt. It's describing one plague, then the next one, then the next one. It's very much a narrative in chronological order. Then suddenly you come to chapter 12 and the text is different. Suddenly, the writer is talking about the Passover and how the Passover was celebrated every year. And intertwined with this description of Passover is the description of the actual event of Exodus. And I believe that this is done very intentionally in these chapters, because the writer, the narrator here, is very purposeful in doing this, because he has a theological lesson for us. He has something for us to learn. He has a purpose in writing in this way. And what we read is this, as the text intertwines between Passover as the event which celebrates Exodus and the way in which the actual rescue occurred. What's the lesson to be learned here? I believe that the people of Israel were called to act in faith by means of this sacrifice of the Passover lamb. Again, let's look at Exodus chapter 12. Let's pick it up verse 21 just to read how this happened here. Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood and in the basin, and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. None of you shall go out of the door of your house until morning. And when the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and on the sides of the door frame, and he will pass over that doorway. And he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and to strike you down." God is calling his people to act in faith here. Now, pay attention to the timeline of the story of Exodus here and Genesis. Last year, if you were here, we were in the story of Genesis, and we were introduced to Abraham, and then in the latter chapters, Abraham's family becomes bigger, right? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And what we read at the end, in fact, the beginning of Exodus, is that Abraham's family grows to 70 people. 70 people went down from the land of promise down to Egypt because of the famine. It's 70 people that land in Egypt with Joseph as he was second in command there. But what happens in the very first few verses of the book of Exodus, a period of 400 years goes by, and what happens? This family of 70 explodes in numbers, and it becomes, by the end of these 400 years, a huge family of 2 to 3 million people, 600,000 men plus women and children. An estimated 2 to 3 million people are now in Egypt. But guess what? They're still this ragtag family. They're not an established nation at this point. They don't have any laws. They haven't been given, the system of sacrifice is further down the road. They're still this ragtag family that's grown very huge. And what God is going to do here now is he's going to rescue this family, because this family is under severe persecution, and he's going to bring them out. But it's only later in the book of Exodus that we read about the establishment of the sacrifices. But what God is asking them to do here in Exodus chapter 12, in preparation for the event of Exodus, is to take a lamb and to sacrifice it. I believe what God is doing here for the people of Israel, he's foreshadowing what will be later revealed in the book of Exodus, that in order for their sins to be covered, they had to sacrifice this lamb. The blood had to be put on the doorposts. And this really is an act of faith of Israel now, as they look forward to what God will later describe in the book of Exodus. Many years later, the writer of Hebrews gives us a bit of the bigger picture perspective, looking back on that time. The writer of Hebrews says in chapter 9, verse 22, in fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. And so God is teaching, training the Israelites this lesson right here in preparation for this event of rescue and exodus. True rescue cannot be accomplished without a sacrifice. To acknowledge, to pay attention to the fact that these people of Israel, though they are the family of God, though they've been chosen, still they are affected by the sin that affects every one of us. And so this sacrifice is necessary. Well, all of this points forward, and it's not hard to draw the picture, right? It's not hard to make the connection between the sacrifice of the Passover lamb and Jesus. Many years later, as Jesus is introduced by John the Baptist, these are the words that John the Baptist will say when he sees Jesus, as we read John chapter 1, verse 29. The next day, John saw Jesus coming toward him, and he said, "Look, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world." And so here is Jesus, who so many years later fulfills and is the full and the complete picture of rescue for all of the peoples of the world. But all of this is tied back to this event of Exodus. The Apostle Paul, when he's writing to the believers in Corinth, says to them, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, he calls Jesus specifically our Passover lamb. In 1 Corinthians 5, he's arguing with them about putting away sin, which is pictured by yeast. He says, "Get rid of that old yeast so that you may be a new unleavened batch as you really are. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed." And so Paul makes this very direct connection between Jesus as the Passover lamb, who comes to fulfill what the Passover itself was foretelling and pointing towards. Well, the story of Exodus reminds us that the people of Israel were in desperate need of rescue. The event of Passover reminds us that sacrifice is necessary for rescue. I want to suggest to you, thirdly, that Passover is this regular reminder. Passover really is a gift from God to the people of Israel, as a regular reminder to remember this gift of rescue, the way in which God drew them up miraculously out of the land of Egypt and established them as a nation. Why did they need this reminder to remember? Well, because they would forget, right? Which is our human tendency as well. We tend to forget the significant events in our lives, especially as time goes along and it goes from generation to generation. And this is exactly what we read in the text here, is twice in two different places in these three chapters. There is talk about the next generations. And so why do we do these rituals? Why do we do the ritual of communion? Why did they do the ritual of Passover? So that the future generations could ask and say, what's the significance of this? Look at chapter 12, verse 25, says this, "And when you come to the land that the Lord your God will give you, as he has promised, you shall keep this service, this Passover. And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck down the Egyptians, but spared our houses.' And the people bowed their heads and worshipped." We're forgetful people. We need reminders. And God gives this reminder. It happens, there's another instance of this in chapter 13, verses 7 through 9, where it says, "Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No unleavened bread shall be seen with you, and no leaven shall be seen in all your territory. You shall tell your son on that day," again, telling the next generation. Why is this important? Why are we doing this Passover? "It is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt." Remembering the rescue. "And it shall be to you as a sign on your hand, a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you up out of Egypt." We need reminders to remember because we're forgetful people. I was reminded about this even in this trip that I did recently here. that sometimes there are significant events that happen in our lives and we learn significant lessons, but we walk away from those lessons and we can forget those lessons quite easily. So we need reminders. For me, a very significant time in my life was 9 years ago. It was one of the most difficult seasons of my life, and I've told that story on numerous times here. But on September 24th, 2009, my wife passed away from after a struggle with cancer, and the ensuing 3 years for me were some of the most dark and difficult years of my life. But as I look back on those 3 years, God was teaching me things in the midst of the pain, in the midst of the loneliness, in the midst of the suffering. God was teaching me things about who He is and about who I am. And He was teaching me, interestingly enough, this idea of remembering, this idea of being attentive, this idea of being attentive to God. Because sometimes someone has said, I think maybe C.S. Lewis has said, that pain is the megaphone that speaks, that reminds us of God and life. And sometimes when we go through those difficult times, God has to teach us those things. And God did teach me those things, but I know that as time goes along, I can even forget those lessons that I learned. And so for me, this event of going to be at my brother-in-law's funeral brought back those memories. And here's the thing, I look back on this, that time in my life from a different perspective now. I feel like God has healed me in so many ways, but I don't want to forget those lessons that I learned. And so we need reminders. And so God gives the gift of Passover to the people of Israel so that they would not forget that they were rescued by the miraculous, beautiful hand of God. And God has given to us, Jesus gave to us, the gift of communion so that we would not forget that it's really only because of the sacrifice of Jesus that we have life. It's nothing to do with what we can do. We were under the sentence of death, and it's only by receiving by grace through faith this gift of life through the sacrifice of Jesus that we have life. And so we have this amazing gift of communion this morning that we can celebrate together and to help us to remember. Jesus was meeting with his disciples just before he went to the cross. And in fact, he was meeting with them to celebrate the Passover meal. And it's amazing that it ties these two events together, that Jesus at the Passover festival sat with his friends. And he said to them, you've been remembering the story of rescue from Egypt. Now, I want you to take this bread and take this cup and remember that the larger story of rescue is through the sacrifice of my body. And so we read in Luke 22 that he took bread and he gave thanks and he broke it and he gave it to them. And he said to them, this is my body. This is my body, which is given for you. Do this and remember. Do this and not forget. Don't let it become distant in the past, but let it be a current reality. Let it be a current reminder to worship and to thank God. And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup and he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. And so today we do have this amazing privilege together to come to the table and to take the bread, and as is our practice here at International Church of Bishkek, to dip the bread in the cup, and in that act to remember that it's all about Jesus. It's nothing about what we did. It's all about what He did. So let us be reminded, and as we are reminded, let our hearts well up with thanksgiving and worship for what He's done for us. Last month, if you were here, we changed our tradition of the way in which we do communion. We used to pass it around to one another. We've chosen, at least for now, to do it by coming forward. So here's how I would invite you to participate. After I pray, I'll invite the music team first to come and to take communion at the table here. And then we just want to open it up. And as the Lord leads you, as you pray and as you prepare your hearts, when you're ready to come, just come and break a piece of the bread and dip it in the juice and take it and remember. If you're a follower of Jesus and these symbols are meaningful to you, we invite you to participate with us. If you're not a follower of Jesus, you don't know what the symbols mean, there's no shame in not coming. But do be curious about the story. It's an amazing story, and it's a story for you too. We would love to talk to you about it. Lord, as we come, I want to confess our forgetful hearts. I want to confess that at times we get caught up in other things in this world, other distractions, and our hearts and our minds get, well, they drift away. We're so thankful for this very simple ritual, which brings our minds back to the grand story of rescue that came to us through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus on the cross. So as we participate today, I pray that this would not be simply ritual, but that in this ritual you will fill us with joy, fill us with worship, fill us with thanksgiving. Be glorified in our lives. Let us go out from here with a new sense of celebrating the life that you give us. More wholeheartedly loving you for what you have done for us. We thank you. We praise you. We glorify your name. In Jesus' name I pray.